Thinking of going on a juice-only fast? Go on an even faster one with the half car, half juicer. Slice your commute time in half and a lot more besides in this vegan-friendly, cutting-edge hybrid.
There's a wrong way to do hybrid and a right way. Powered by over two decades of hybrid innovation and featuring a connected in-car multimedia suite, the Toyota CHR self-charging hybrid is living proof not all hybrids are born equal. Hello, hybrid happiness.
Finally, a movie for people who hate glass and mirrors. We saw Shattered, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Did you know you wonder how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made. I'm your host, Paul Scheer, a.k.a. Tall John, and today we are talking about Shattered. Now, which Shattered are we talking about? We're talking about the one that came out in 1991, starring Tom Berenger, Greta Sacchi, and, of course, the late, great Bob Hoskins. The movie is about a man and a wife who get into a horrible car accident. The man has amnesia, but suspects that something is up. We'll get into all of this, but first, let me welcome my co-host. Please welcome June Diane Raphael and Jason Manzoukas. How are you both?
You know, this was a wild ride. This was this is the kind of movie that I feel like I would have rented from the video store.
Oh my God, I was just gonna say this, Jason.
Right? That I would have been like, I bet this is going to be awesome. And I would have been disappointed. Even though there was boobs, so I'm sure I would have been excited for that.
Well, that's what I was thinking when I saw it. I feel like I thought to myself, I've definitely seen this with my parents on a couch. Yeah. Yep. Like, uncomfortable.
You know, when you would rent Pacific Heights or, you know, like all of the thrillers of this era.
And by the way, what's so interesting about that is like, I feel that the number, I mean, I know we've talked about thrillers before and I do love a thriller, but the number of movies in the 90s, the thrillers about like men kind of figuring out who they were. Like I was thinking about
Regarding Henry
and the Ritz Crackers and him painting, and even like The
Fugitive.
That's J.J.
Abrams' first script.
Oh, wow. I loved that movie. That was one of the few movies I had on VHS.
I think he wrote it in college.
Wow. I had that movie on VHS and watched it like 8 million times with Ann Archer, who was incredible in it. Scientologist. Oh,
yeah. We did have
That's a lady. That's for the ladies of the 80s podcast. Ann Archer, Bonnie Bedelia. Come on.
Oh, Bonnie Bedelia. I loved all of these movies.
Yes.
You know, and so this movie felt very familiar.
Wolfgang Petersen, who made this movie, made so many of those movies. He did like Air Force One. He did like Harrison Ford movies. He did like
Outbreak, Air Force One, The Boat, The Neverending Story, The Perfect Storm, In the Line
he
of Fire,
Troy. The Neverending Story?
Yep.
Wow.
I did not know.
Yeah. But I will say that Molly did some amazing research and actually put together a list of thrillers in the early 90s that all had like a similar vibe. It was movies like Malice, Deceived, Shattered, Mortal Thoughts. Those all came out in the same year. Then in 92, it was like Consenting Adults, Unlawful Entry, Presumed Innocent.
Presumed Innocent is another. Yes. That's another one. Yeah. Innocent.
Remember Jagged Edge?
Jagged Edge, of course.
Oh, great. Guilty as Sin, Sleeping with the Enemy, and A Kiss Before Dying. I mean, this is a time.
And I would say like 40% of those movies feature amnesia.
That's what I'm saying.
Like in the 80s and 90s, everybody got amnesia. You didn't
make it through that decade without it.
You know, Randy's got amnesia.
COVID in this decade. Like, you're going to get it. It's just a matter of time.
You're going to get some amnesia, but you also are going to figure out, I think what's going on
is. Oh, did you hear about Gary? Oh, yeah, retrograde amnesia. The guy doesn't remember a goddamn thing.
Well, in this movie, it's called psychogenic amnesia. I'll let the movie explain.
We call that psychogenic amnesia. The patient doesn't know his name, his family, his personal history. Everything else he remembers. The year, who's president. He can drive a car, he can function professionally. But anything personal, just out of reach.
For how long?
Could be a week. I'm gonna have to be honest. Could also be permanent.
This movie is, to me, I wrote this down and I don't want to, like, look, I know we're talking about all these movies and we love this type of film, but this film in particular is like, people paid money to go see this in the theater. Like, this was a movie in the theater. Like, it feels to me so, and I maybe it's just because of where I'm at now, but like, so streaming, it's like, it seems made for TV. It doesn't
feel
big.
Well, this is the kind of movie that doesn't exist anymore. Like, yeah. We don't make these movies anymore, right? The closest,
I wish we did.
The closest we've come, we did it on this show, which was the J-Lo movie, The Boy Next Door. You know what I mean?
Which had
components of kind of, you know, these kind of erotic thriller type stuff, but it wasn't even good enough. It wasn't even up to this level.
These movies were like written by people who are like, I kind of hate my wife. I kind of hate my husband. If only I could kill them, or only if I could frame them for murder. Or what if I found out my wife was a murderer? What if I found out my wife was a, you know, this constant, like, you can tell that in the early 90s, there was a deep resentment of spouses and they were being taken out in these movies.
And seemingly the only way to get out of a bad marriage, murder.
Oh,
murder,
well, by the way,
and a convoluted plot to cover it up. Like, there isn't, the way, like, I want a divorce.
Welcome to, like, Dateline. I mean, that essentially, Dateline
is the catchphrase. Welcome to Dateline.
And honestly, you're right, Paul, because we don't have these movies anymore, but we do have Dateline. And I just want to quickly shout out the Dateline podcast.
Oh.
Because I know that I'm not alone. It's one of the most popular podcasts on podcasting.
No, let me just say something
about
this.
I love that you
didn't
even know how to end that sentence. It's one of the most popular podcasts on .. And podcasting. I watched your brain really try and figure out what TPN, the podcasting network.
You know, it's the Dax Shepard show, then Dateline, or maybe, you know, they switch spots back and forth.
You'd be surprised, Paul. You'd be surprised. It's very popular.
Right on the podcasting network.
I am shocked. And I believe you, June. I am shocked, though, because the Dateline podcast, as I've heard many times, because June likes to fall asleep with the phone by the bed on, not in headphones. It's just playing podcasts by the side of the bed.
I do that as well.
Thank you, Jason.
Okay.
Yes.
So as I come
Except
in.
Except I'm playing Harry Potter audiobook.
Oh, interesting.
I'm a 49-year-old man who falls asleep to stories.
You should have come to
someone reading him a child's story.
You should have come to our son's birthday party or his friend's birthday party. They got to make their own potions.
Okay, you can tell that friend I'm pissed I wasn't invited.
I'll tell Sufi right now.
Now, I will say that listening to podcasts as you're falling asleep, well, I'm also, I can no longer be alone with my own thoughts. It's like not safe. So yes. I like to just have my friends around.
Keith Morrison, a light story of murder. I gave June a Keith Morrison ornament for Christmas because I knew how much he means to her.
Wow. You know what? And if you had asked me, I wouldn't have known who the host of Dateline was.
I would not.
That's how not on Dateline I am.
Well, there are other correspondents, you know, but Keith
but he's
is
the best.
Keith is important.
He's the main guy.
Okay. Here's what I'll say about the Dateline podcast. There's never been a more fuck you energy than Dateline because, yes, they are popular. How popular are they? It feels like someone has gone up to the TV and pressed record and they go, and that's the podcast because it is cut as
you know
a television show.
That's why I appreciate it.
It's like the TV show.
They're not going in to re-record. And lots of times they're like, and as you can see, the next thing happened. And then they'll just cut to sounds and we can't see.
You can't see.
We can't.
They cut to commercials that aren't there. It's like, and when we get back, Melissa does confront her husband. When Melissa confronted
Lots
her
of
husband, it's like
references that you're never going to get.
They're not even bridging.
So really
they're not even bridging
just,
it.
Oh, that's fascinating.
But I appreciate it because I'm like, Dateline, the show is that's the text and that's the you know, or like that's the raw material. And so I appreciate the commitment to us listeners of like, we know where the source material is and we know what it is and how good it is.
If you've watched the episode, are you listening to the same thing in the podcast episode? You're doubling up.
I'm not always. I don't really catch it on TV.
Yeah, okay.
I'm more just.
Oh, I see. Got it.
Via podcast. But there's no help. They have not added and re-recorded extra things to
help
you along
as
a listener. No.
That's
fascinating. By the way, It seems to me like the Dateline podcast may put out 400 episodes a year.
Well, I'll tell you, they release every Tuesday. And I am waiting and I'm ready. And I know people always yell at us about like, oh, you guys don't release our episodes enough. And I get so pissed and I'm like, we don't charge anything for this and blah, blah, blah. But I now understand what it is to be a listener who's waiting for an episode to drop.
By the way, we drop our episodes on time every week.
I'm sure saying like, I now get why like
the fans lament.
Yeah, I really do. Cause I'm like,
you're out there just checking the podcast network to see if it's updated for a new dateline.
By the way, I will say this too.
The weirdest thing is when I like drive home and I'm like not ready to get out of the car, you know, cause I got to find out what happens. And then to just watch your children through a window playing and be listening to a Dateline episode.
Jason, she looks at me weird because I think that now her mind has been poisoned by murderous husbands. It's like I watched one episode where it was.
Oh, I'm certain. Like I can completely understand June coming into the house, you saying something, and her being like, "What are you up to?"
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even last night when you came home, and I just changed my voice just slightly, it really freaked you out.
I just listened to something that was very unsettling on the drive home. That's why.
You should do random weird things, Paul, that are like dig a hole in the backyard and then put it, then cover it back up.
I do want to direct listeners because there's a recent episode of Dateline, and then we'll get to this podcast, obviously. But there is
Have been an episode of Dateline.
That's true.
There is an episode that is just about, it's called Venom, and it's about these like snake and exotic animal, owners, but specifically a man who it appears was killed by a snake. And then the story unfolds. And let's just say it's a little bit more complicated.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Well, I bet he was killed by a snake. All right. I just want to put down some groundwork here for people. This movie is available on Tubi, our good friend Tubi, but also everywhere else, Amazon and
it's also
and
available
iTunes.
On not Tubi.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
Tubi, and you can make the choice.
Tubi
or not Tubi. You can make that choice. Here's what I will say for us, if you will agree with this. I don't think we should reveal the twist right now. Let's talk a little bit around it until we feel like we want to reveal the twist. Or would you like to go in just going twist on?
Let me say
this. What's interesting, and I won't reveal it yet, is when you said in the opening, just like log line of the opening description of the movie about our main character not being able to look in the mirror. I didn't actually understand that. And now I'm looking back on it and I'm like, oh, of course.
Right.
Well, by the way, I figured out the twist I was writing a joke. And as I wrote the joke, I was like, that's the fucking twist.
Yeah. Did you know it, Jason? I did not know
it. I did as well because there's a line that tips it really specifically in a way that I thought was clumsy.
Let's reveal the twist.
Let's talk about the movie. Let's talk about the movie chronologically. And if it organically arrives, we can spoil the twist. Suffice it to say, this movie for almost the entirety of its runtime is presuming one thing, and only in the very final minutes does it have a twist that opens up.
Which is ultimately all these movies. I mean, there was a movie with like Ed Norton about like he was on trial. Like it was always like the third act and you know, like he was the killer. He was the person. I just thought that this movie opened up in such a hilarious way. We talked about falling off the rock face in that Killing Me Softly movie. Here we watch a Mercedes get launched out of a fucking cannon. Like like that Mercedes flies out, and I was like, this
movie is set in San Francisco, and there are so many cars launched off of cliffs into fireballs. It's incredible. Like Wolfgang Peterson loves those big special effects moments.
I mean, and they actually, again, Molly did some great research here and found that they built a custom-built gun with compressed gas that can that had a thrust of 1,400 pounds, wow. which was able to send a Mercedes 200 feet off a cliff before it fell more than 500 feet. And they had six cameras, several manned by rope-secured technicians experienced in climbing rock faces to get into pivotal positions.
Wow.
And then they had to have cameras lower down on the cliff to be put in place with their equipment and a heavy-duty helicopter capable of lifting 2,000 pounds to get all this footage. And let me tell you, every bit of that footage is used because they show so many flips. It's like a fucking SNL Toonces the Cat sketch.
Yeah.
Like, ka-kunk, 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 ka-kunk. And I was like, oh, okay, got it. Ka-kunk, ka-kunk, ka-kunk. It's like, okay, got it. Ka-kunk, ka-kunk. And then right after ka-kunk, 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 they have a flashback to ka-kunk, ka-kunk.
Yeah.
Like, we just saw it 30 seconds ago. We don't need the flashback of how hard
this
the car fell.
This movie is 40% flashbacks.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
1,000%.
Yes. It's
40% flashbacks, and I would say 70% everyone not understanding how to deal with anybody on a human level. These people are monsters.
Everybody is like, yeah, everybody's a monster.
The
except for
doctor?
Tom Berenger, who yes. is the character who has amnesia, who is like a tabula rasa, who is yes. like wandering through the movie being like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
At
but
what
it
point
turns
it goes
out to- he is kind of a monster.
Well, no.
No, he's not.
Not a monster.
He's not.
An
that's
innocent.
The twist.
I'm sorry. You're right.
Take it back.
Not a monster.
But well, they try to make him think he's a monster.
Yes. So I mean, we're there. So we might as well. So
well, let's start at the hospital because will find out is so Tom Berenger is in that car and his wife has been thrown out of it and he is so severely injured that his face is unrecognizable and like
he
mangled.
Looks. I mean, he looks like a trauma character, like the Toxic Avenger.
I mean, I
Avenger.
Laughed when I saw it. It's absurd.
It made me laugh so hard
me
because
what
it's
what was interesting, though, is that they didn't wrap, because I think another choice would have been to, like, wrap him in gauze.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? But they were like, no, you're going to see.
For the twist to work, you need to see him.
But by the way, there is something so crazy, though, because he has so many open wounds on his face.
Yeah.
The fact that they wouldn't wrap him up
yes.
to just protect the... He's
so many
literally
seeping wounds.
Seeping wounds. But the doctor who wakes up... We see the wife get tossed out of the car, and she kind of rolls. And when the wife wakes up...
She's okay. She's minorly injured.
Her arm's in a light sling. A very light sling. The doctor wakes her up. She like literally looks... To me, like, she's just woken up out of a coma. We find out later. It seems like only, like, an hour later or two.
Like 3 hours. She's in the hospital for, like, 3 hours.
And she wakes up. She, like, looks at him and goes, oh, well, you made it out okay. Luckily you made it out okay. Wish we could say the same for your husband. Whoa. Hold on. This woman just is waking up from a coma and you're dropping this. He doesn't even wait to drop that your husband is horribly injured to this woman who has not asked.
The question should just be like, how do you feel?
Yeah.
Do you have amnesia?
Been in a terrible accident. But,
yeah,
you know,
you're alive.
Yes.
You know, I mean, here's the interesting thing that this movie got my wheels turning. And I wanted to have your mom on, Paul. Maybe we could call her real quick because I do think one of the things that I...
You want me to call my mom?
Because I want to ask her this question.
All right, let's see if I can.
So, just hold on because I want to talk it through and then we'll formulate it.
Okay.
But what we come to find out is that the man in the car, there was an assumption from this doctor mm-hmm. that he was her husband. Mm-hmm. He was not. He was her lover.
That's the twist.
Yes.
Now, what then happens is this man is so mangled when they start his recovery and plastic surgery because he's unrecognizable, she provides a photo of her husband.
Right.
Okay, so he is then reconstructed to look like her husband. Now, my question for your mom and like the healthcare system is, do you have to do any identification? Like, can you just start?
Like, had they fingerprinted him, they would have figured out.
Immediately.
Like, that's the thing. Like, Joanne Wally Kilmer's character realizes it's not him because his hands are different. You know?
Right.
Yeah, you're right. And then, you know, just in terms of blood type and all of the medical questions. And that's what I want to ask your mom about. Like, are there any protocols in place?
The movie skips over a lot of that stuff because, like, then it falls apart, right?
I mean, the fact that their voices—maybe not.
Maybe you could just be like, "This is my husband."
Well, by the way, this is how I figured out the twist. Because at one point, Tom Berenger, tabula rasa, Tom Berenger, who is recovering from amnesia, is in his office trying to like put together his life, and he finds a roll of like negatives, like film negatives. And in the roll of negatives, he's examining them and he sees his wife having sex with somebody else. And so as he's looking in, like every frame is getting a clear picture of that's definitely his wife and that's not him. Who is it? And then they reveal who it is. And I wrote down, she having sex with Tom Berenger's stunt double?
Yeah.
And I was like, because they look so alike.
They look
and then
a lot
I was like, Okay, I get it. Like, because like they needed him to look enough alike Tom Berenger so you could buy the twist. But they looked too, like, he really does look like the stunt double of Tom Berenger.
It's
like,
actually interesting. I think it would have worked a little better. The movie would have worked a little better if they didn't look so similar.
I agree. But I think it would have been, I agree it would have been a bigger surprise, but I think they did it because
he couldn't
it
have blonde
been,
hair.
It could have been done.
Right, because his hair.
You could have made that guy look kind of like Tom Berenger.
I think they needed to have the same hair. And by the way, hair in this movie is amazing. There's a great wig moment in this movie.
Oh.
But by the way, when they are operating on him, extensive plastic surgery on this man's face. And, you know, they're looking at his nose and they're doing everything right. the operating rooms are so dark. They're like, they are operating by candlelight. This is like a scene
it's
from
the
like
Nick.
The Nick.
Yeah. So can you just call your mom quickly? See if she'll pick up and just ask her this. Just say a person comes into the hospital.
Okay, hold on.
Completely mangled. Can you please ask her, babe?
All right,
please.
All right. If someone came into a hospital with a disfigured face and like, say I approached you, I came into a hospital, June and I were in a car accident and her face was disfigured. And I said, that's my wife. And they're like, we need to do plastic surgery on her. And I gave pictures of June to the plastic surgeon to help reconstruct her face. Would they just do it? Or would they need to verify that that is definitely June and I'm not having them do different plastic surgery, like of the different face of someone?
You're making me look like someone else I'm not.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the way it would work. If you came in following an accident, then you would have an ambulance driver that had picked up and they would have looked at identification. If her face was so disfigured, but she was cognitively able to make her own healthcare decisions, she would have to sign her own healthcare consent form and she would identify herself as June or whomever.
What if
and
I
you
had
would
amnesia
have identification.
Amnesia.
If she had no identification, that presents a problem. We would probably say to you, go home and bring back some identification. Unless it was an emergency. If it was an emergency, they would just take her to the operating room and do the best that they could.
And now, two questions here. If she is in a coma and can't answer those questions, they could maybe or she had amnesia. I guess we're trying to figure out a plot point of this movie. If she had amnesia and she couldn't remember who she was, it would still go back to ID.
Yeah, somebody would have to bring in, first of all, an evaluation from a psychiatrist that she actually has amnesia and how, you know, this soon. In other words, within the, like, let's say the last two weeks to a month. And that during that period of time, you might have gone to work, might have gone to court, and you obtained guardianship or in the process of becoming her guardian, or you had paperwork from an attorney identifying who you were and who she was, et cetera, so that they could go ahead.
Okay. This is fascinating and really helps us with this movie that we're talking about. And I appreciate your expertise. Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right. Bye. All right, bye. So what my mom said was the ambulance driver would look for ID. So she would see the ID of the person. Now, in this scenario, she could have swapped IDs very easily because she might have had her husband's ID from when.
Sure.
She dumped him in
or
the boat.
What if there is no ID?
Well, we thought it was interesting that you chose to represent it as what if you and June were in an accident, you wanted to reconstruct June, not the opposite, as is shattered.
I just needed to put it in a personal moment so she could understand the stakes that we're talking about. So she said to me that ID is very important. If the person couldn't speak and they were incredibly damaged, that they would rush them to the ER and do the best that they could. But it wouldn't be about recreating to a face necessarily as much as it would be fixing what they could get done. But it would be about ID. And then I said, what about amnesia? And she said that for amnesia to be a viable part of this, the person would have to have gone through a court system and you'd have to be legally given guardianship of the person to make those decisions for your person that you are.
You asked her, what are those forms and how can I get them?
And I did. Yeah. I have
did
her sending
them. Is it a PDF?
I have her sending me a DocuSign.
This
so I'm going to take a look at that and just do them right now.
Like a Dateline episode.
You know, by the way, I do think this is, here's a couple things that I think are coming out of this that actually are important and maybe important for all of us to listen to. I don't carry my ID on me at all times.
Sure.
June, you barely are able to keep your wallet unlost for more than 2 months.
I know. I have trouble keeping those things together.
So much so that you take my keys and then my keys go lost for a long period of time.
That's right. Now, Paul, remember when you literally, I don't think, have forgiven me for when I lost the keys to your rental car and we couldn't return it.
Yes.
Oh, what did you have to do?
Oh, Jason, all right. So let me just paint the picture here.
Are you still renting the car?
Well, I rented a car because my car is in the shop.
We thought we were going to have to buy it. It was so...
We've been renting a car for 11 years.
We rented a car and June says to me...
It's parked in a garage
my wonderful wife says to me, she says, I'm going to go get us coffee. So I said, great. She said, I'll take the rental car. I said, perfect.
That's what was so confusing.
She goes down the block. Down to the coffee store, down the block. And then I get a call 5 minutes later, and she says, I lost the rental keys. I can't get back in the car. I'm like, wait, what do you mean you lost the rental keys? You just left. You just drove there. You just got out. What happened?
I lost them.
And I'm like, have you looked around the parking lot? Yes, they're nowhere.
What?
So the car was
everywhere.
Sitting in the coffee store's parking lot, unable to be accessed. Move. And it was one of those things, and this is an issue I have with rental car companies. They put both keys on the same thing.
Like, and you can't separate them.
You can't separate them. So it's like you're going to lose both keys if you're going to lose them. You're going to lose them. And the keys were not in the car. She
was
going to
lock
the keys.
Were they in the car?
No, they were lost.
They were
never found. They were a big, chunky, like, you know, Hertz rental car. Like,
amazing.
It wasn't like.
What did you have to do?
There was a lot of paperwork to fill out. And
did they have to come and tow it away?
Well, at a certain point.
Like Hertz,
we released. Our liability was released. I believe that it's one of those moments where I was very thankful that I took out the insurance because it was like, hey, we lost the keys to the car. And they're like, well, you have the insurance. And it's like, that's it. Don't worry about it. We got it from here.
So
where is it
parked? That's an interesting. Yeah, I guess that's for you guys, knowing that that is like a regular part of your lives, losing keys, the insurance makes sense.
Anyway. All right,
so anyway, so my mom, so my mom has posited that it would be impossible, but if the damage was so severe, they could have rushed him into surgery. Now, what I'm realizing is I thought that because I figured out the twist early on that Greta Saatchi had planned this entire thing ahead of time, but it seems to me she was running like she was going on the fly.
She was making some game time decisions, and they were life changing.
And like, by the way, she got really close to pulling it off.
For sure. Really close. And now I look back and I'm like, I kind of blame that doctor.
Well, because they rushed.
Okay.
They rushed to make some choices. And look, a couple times in this movie,
he made some assumptions even that that was her husband.
Sure.
I mean, well, you're right.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, like, he was wrong. He should have gone a little bit farther.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
there was the passenger you were with. Why would he assume that that was her husband?
Well, there was a lot of confusion in the, because everybody, it turns out everybody's cheating with other people in the movie.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you know,
because
Tom Berenger's character is also having an affair with Corbin Burnson's wife, played by Joanne Whalley Kilmer.
Can we just expand our grouping of friends? Everyone's fucking each other's wives. It just seems like it's going to be bound for issues.
And the rich people in the 90s, in the early 90s, like that was.
In
that
San
was
Francisco, thing. Bro?
San Francisco?
Gotta get
Frisco?
In there.
I gotta
have Corbin Burnson's wife.
Choice.
By the way, is this a prequel to Major League? I was wondering about, or maybe it's a postquel.
Yeah. What was the one with John Lithgow that I think was also set in San Francisco?
There's a Denzel Washington one where he gives him
there's
herpes.
Pacific Heights, which is San Francisco.
That's Michael Keaton.
A lot of San Francisco a lot of erotic thrillers were set in San Francisco.
Which is interesting because this is San Francisco before like the tech boom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is
like,
pre-Silicon Valley.
What was going on in
Marina
San Francisco?
Work. This is another one of those weird professions in a movie. They were in marina. They were in the marina business. So much so that when Tom Berenger
were building like condos and were building on the
okay.
marina. They were that was like their site that they were gonna.
Okay, so they were a building place.
They were a build. Yeah, developers basically. Okay,
they were developers, but Paul is right that this was such a weird fucking thing that they had this boat.
Yes,
that was housing all of their toxic material,
toxic waste boat that they keep wading through.
Yes,
I was like, why would you wade through the toxic wastewater?
And at certain points, they're covering their nose like the smell is so bad. But the final act, everyone's not covering their face at all.
Bob Hoskins goes under this. A PSA needs to happen here. Bob Hoskins goes underwater. He's repeatedly using an asthma inhaler throughout the movie.
Bob Hoskins, a British New Yorker.
Yes.
So this accent, which you get like insane moments like this.
You see, Mr. Murray, my guess is that you killed him. The night I sent you the pictures, the night you had the accident, my guess is your wife's been covering up for you all along. And my guess is Jenny Scott somehow put the pieces together and was threatening to go to the cops.
I didn't kill Jenny.
What about Stanton?
Maybe I did. Maybe that's the block that the doctors are talking about. Maybe I'm a raving psychopath, but I can't remember.
So good. But he goes underwater and he's shot. He goes underwater. He seems to drown. Okay.
Yes.
And then
he's underwater for a long time.
He's underwater for so long. Then he arrives Deus Ex Machina style to save the day, to save not Tom Berenger, Tom Berenger's life. And he says, and he's like, how did you survive? And he's like, you know what? I had my own supply. And he holds up his asthma inhaler as if it's a scuba tank that provides oxygen that allowed him to breathe underwater. And that is not how an asthma inhaler works.
And you're listen, not as getting somebody who uses an asthma inhaler.
Same.
Okay. Like it doesn't, it, there's no oxygen in there.
It's a medication. It's usually a bronchodilator, which is opening up your airways.
Which would make him actually more susceptible, I think, to dying.
Yes.
But by the way, he's also shot in the arm. His ability to get back in the game is quick. He gets shot. He goes underwater. He almost drowns. He gets out of the boat. He gets himself repaired. Gets in a hel— by the way, the cops are like, come with us. We need you in the helicopter, too. I have no idea why he's in the helicopter at the end. I mean, oh, it's like
the police helicopter must go and pick him up. And Tom Berenger and Greta Scacchi have, or Scacchi or whatever, have only driven just up the hill a bit.
Well, like, I mean,
so much has happened in Bob Hoskins's timeline compared to what's happened in theirs.
And by the way, can I just say something about this movie? The lax nature of this movie in their laws, because first of all, they were drunk driving. At no point does anyone hold them accountable. It's like, oh, yeah, well, you were driving because it's New Year's. You were drunk. I mean, of course. Like, it's like that.
There's no
judgment on it. There's no crime on it.
It's just fact.
And when Tom Berenger gets out of the hospital, the first scene that we see is them driving back into San Francisco, and he is clearly out of his seat without a fucking seatbelt on, kissing Greta. I'm like, dude, you just got into a horrible car accident. Put the seatbelt on.
Also, you have amnesia. He goes to the office. He's trying to do work. The guy, you have, that would destroy you.
This is the thing. These people, like Corbin Burns and his best friend, is like, let me go talk to Jack in the other room. He goes, all right, Jack, we got to talk about this marina. It's like, this man,
he has no amnesia. Idea what's happening.
He doesn't know
and
who
Corbin
you are.
Corbin Burnson's like, you've been doing some pretty good work in here. What work? So what's funny. He been doing?
Here's the thing that I had to, at the end, look back and think, which was, did Jack always kind of want this man's life?
I think I think he wanted to edge him out of the business because he knew he was fucking his wife.
Oh, you mean Corbin Burnson?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. I think that Corbin Burnson wanted to edge him out.
I'm talking about the name of the guy?
No, you're right. You're right.
Jack. Jack Stanton.
Jack Stanton.
Oh,
yes.
Jack Stanton is okay. So Greta Saatchi.
I think Jack Stanton just wanted to be with Tom Berenger's wife.
Well, that's interesting because then Jack Stanton is kind of a savant. Like, how was he able to do this?
That's what I was going to say. Yes. Like, he's going to the office. He's doing some work that Corbin Burnson is impressed by. This guy is a fake. He's not really Tom Berenger.
What did Jack Stanton do in his own life?
He's successful because he drives a Porsche, but we don't know.
Obviously.
Maybe he's like a sugar, like maybe he's like a side guy, like just wealthy women like give him money to like a midnight cowboy. He's just sort of a. But there is something about.
I wonder. We never did get information about Jack Stanton's like actual life. Like no, and that's like
well,
I wish this movie
somebody,
had explored a little bit. Like who's Jack Stanton's family? Anybody? No, well, I guess not.
He literally
nobody's looking for him.
He sends a fax. I got that job in Japan. To whom? Did he send
Paul,
that?
To someone named Paul.
To Paul.
To his boss.
To
his boss at whatever business he worked at.
Well, then my question is, okay.
To you.
Oh, I got it. You know what? I should have returned that fax. Wait. The fax machine moment. When that is revealed that there was a sent from his office.
Yeah.
Tom Berenger, who's already been breaking mirrors and glass throughout the whole movie, picks up this fax machine that is the only bit of clue and information that they have that something is up, takes it, lifts it over his head, and then throws it out of a window of a skyscraper, which is,
so dangerous.
That window breaks open easily. They show that it just crashes like on a lower level landing. But still,
yeah.
Why the anger on the fax machine? Why the anger on the fax machine?
Well, here's the thing. This is what I really didn't understand. If I'm this woman and I know that I killed my husband and that my lover, I've changed my lover's face so that I can be protected and so that we can be together. I guess I just didn't understand why she wouldn't tell him. Like, why go through witnessing him trying to understand who he is and take that risk?
Why not invite him in? Why? Well, so what you're asking is really interesting because it's a kind of a central flaw of the movie, but the movie wouldn't exist without it, which is she is trying to convince him that he's Tom Berenger.
Right.
But it must be terrified if his memories were to return, he would remember he is Jack Stanton. What she should be doing is saying, you're Jack Stanton, and trying to get him to remember their love and their relationship. And
But she would have to reveal that she's a murderer because she shot her husband. Greta Saatchi shot
her. In self-defense, though. Like, that's the thing. It seemed like he was going to kill her.
Yeah, no, he's really being
Do we know that Tom Berenger is a bad guy? I guess that's the question. Do we know? Okay, he is a bad guy.
We do. Yeah, it's kind of stated a couple of times, and then it's shown in one of the flashbacks. He's a real piece of shit, which helps you understand why Corbin Burns in and Joanne Welling Kilmer and all those people were like, oh yeah, you were a shitty husband. You were a bad guy. Yeah. You were this.
But Joanne Welling Kilmer is having an affair with him, so she couldn't think he's that shitty because they were going to get married and run away. They were in love.
But the thing that Jack Stanton says to Greta Saatchi in the car is, I'm not going to do this. We got to go to the police. I have to tell the police, you know. And that's when like, he's definitively like, I'm not going to help you get away with this.
Right.
And that's when she drives him off the road.
Correct.
And so I think that what she's trying to do, because she's such a liar, because we've set that up too, that Greta Saatchi is like a big time liar and that she's always making up stories, that I think that she thought she could have her cake and eat it too, which is I can remake the husband that I want, with the great sex that makes me think I'm crashing waves, which I found to be a very odd representation of sex.
Crashing waves and breaking glass.
Yeah, so bizarre. So, but she didn't realize that Jack would get suspicious, and as it's revealed here.
I saw both you go in that hotel.
You saw me go in. I got changed, and then I went out the back door where I had the Porsche parked.
You dress up like Stanton. And you almost killed me. Now you're telling me that I killed Stanton. Wait a minute. Before the accident, that's what you said?
Yeah.
You fucking liar! Jack Stanton was alive and well and in my office sending a fax 5 hours after the accident.
That was me! I sent the fax to make believe Stanton was still alive. Why do you think I checked out of the hospital so goddamn fast? To start covering for you. But then you brought back Klein. Don't you see? You hired someone to find out that you're a murderer. You hired somebody to send you to the gas chamber.
That's right. He hired a PI to find out that he hired a PI, and this unravels the whole thing. Bob Hoskins, really the hero of the story.
And a great character. You know what I mean? Like, he owns a pet store, but he's a private investigator. Like, I loved all of this character work because everybody else is so like, you know, oh, we work in a skyscraper, we drive Porsches, blah, blah, blah. He's a real like street level, down and dirty kind of like, yeah, I'm a PI. I drive this car. I kiss a snake. Like, it's really, I really liked him.
But how did, so then in this world, Tom Berenger hired him. So Tom Berenger found him.
Yes.
God knows how to get information. All right. So I just want to lay out the plot. Tom Berenger hires a private eye to get definitive proof that his wife is cheating on him because he wants to leave his wife and marry Corbin Burnson's wife.
No.
I don't think so.
Okay, but he's definitely getting information on her because why?
Well, I think because I think he suspects she's cheating on him.
Yeah, and he saw those photos and stuff, but I don't think that he...
But those photos... No, the original. He's talking about the original, the real Tom...
The real Tom Berenger.
The real Tom Berenger, not the...
That's what I'm saying.
Tom Berenger hires...
Yeah, the real the Tom Berenger
Bob
shot.
Hoskins in the past.
I'm
so,
sorry.
Yeah, so the original Tom Berenger, who is dead or in that tank in the toxic waste and seemingly is doing fine. Like, his body is preserved.
Well, Bob Hoskins says, little did they know it was formaldehyde, so it's going to preserve. It's not going to break down.
That's a formaldehyde boat. I love that.
Oh, you know, the old formaldehyde boat that's good. That's sinking off the coast.
Why would formaldehyde be in their materials even?
Who knows?
Like,
yeah, I mean,
that much of it.
I mean, the fact that they had to dub this man's voice. So basically, we also are saying that Jack Stanton and Tom Berenger both had the same voice and they looked alike. So it's also like she definitely had a type. But I believe that he was trying to get her out of the picture. by proving that she was cheating on him. But then he comes home on New Year's Eve and he's like, you bitch, you're cheating on me. So he just saw the pictures. He confronts her about the pictures. Mm-hmm. And then she calls Jack Stanton, who is at Corbin Burnson's party. But they didn't seem like, were they at Corbin Burnson's party too?
No, I think he was at, didn't he say he was at the Hacienda or the hotel?
The Hacienda.
But Corbin,
yeah, he was at the Hacienda.
But Jack Stanton was at the party, because when they cut to him, he's on the, he's the,
I'm
the backdrop.
I'm starting to feel a little insane.
I'm not sure. I don't think he's at Corbin Burnson's party though.
You don't think so? I thought that
I don't
that's,
think so.
Okay. So the Hacienda is having a big party. Then maybe that's
I
what
assume
it is.
Because
okay.
It's New Year's Eve.
Got it. Okay.
Regardless,
and
it's
we know
New
it's
Year's
New Year's Eve.
Eve
because in the date book, Tom Berenger writes, "Remember to get champagne for New Year's Eve." Remember to get champagne. So he's mad at his wife for cheating on him. So he's confronting her. She shoots him. So basically, she shoots him because he's mad at her because she's cheating. But I think that, like, I think what you're meant to believe, I believe, is that she shot him a little too quickly. And that's why Jack Stanton is not...
What do you mean a little too quickly?
Because I think...
I'm going to stay out of this one.
All right, hold on. Well, my thought is this. And I think this is the crux of the movie.
A little too quickly?
I think that Tom Berenger is yelling at her and screaming at her. And he's like,
He throws her into the night table.
He slaps her. He's confronting, and they talk
okay,
about...
Okay, all right, so my theory falls apart. I forgot
And the
that.
Corbin Burnson dinner
How
party
scene...
How
damaged would you like her to be? Unrecognizable?
Well,
she picks up a gun and tries to defend herself?
Well, but why didn't Jack Stanton go, well, he was attacking you, I got your back. Like, let's
well,
figure this...
She's yeah,
like, her immediate
her
thing
defense.
Is, like, her immediate thing is, let's bury him in the boat. Because if they don't crash, there's no plan. Where the boat, like, what's the plan if they don't crash the car?
That's the question is, they get rid of the body, but Jack Stanton is still saying, we got to call the police. I got to go to the police. I can't do this.
But
and
why,
what I couldn't figure out was Tom Berenger seemed to be an abusive, like a nasty character. So why not call the police and say it was self-defense?
Well, that's what
like,
I'm saying.
That's what I can't.
Well, that's the issue that I'm trying to
like,
get to the
Like, even Jack
crux
Stanton
of.
Would probably back her up, you know,
well, that's,
from
like
what
that,
he saw.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, he was attacking her. I walked in on it. She shot him. I was here. I saw the whole thing. But he doesn't do that. Instead, he helps her hide the body. And at that point, he's like, we gotta... Like, there are so many... Like, this is the craziest moment. Because even if he went along... Say he goes along with the plan. Well, yes, we're gonna hide the body. Let's go to the ship. Let's go hide the body. They hide the body in the ship. Then the plan is what? He's just disappeared?
Well, the movie would make sense if it was like, okay, then, you know, we're going to get you in an accident. We're going to make you look like him.
Right.
And then Jack Stanton will die.
And we have all this money that we're going to... You sell the business.
Yes, you will be rich. And we will live happily ever after. That would seem to be like a plan they both would have. So the fact that it is they are in disagreement and then the disagreement turns into a tussle and then they drive off the edge. She seems to be making the plan up as she goes.
Mm. Very much so. I mean, what do you think that the party guests at the Hacienda must have thought when she walked in with her Jack Stanton wig on?
Yes. And leather jacket.
And leather jacket and walked through the lobby and I guess back
Out the back door. Well, she walked in the lobby.
She was flailing about. She was in a free fall this entire time. We didn't know it, but she was freaking the fuck out.
I wish the movie had been told from her point of view. I wish there was a sequel that was just told from her point
because
of view.
Because she walks into the Hacienda as herself, I guess rents a room, quickly changes, and then walks out through the back door with that wig, which is a great-looking wig. And, I mean, when she takes off that wig, it is what a
great
reveal.
But then she comes back in with the wig on.
Yes, she goes back into the house with the wig on. But here's my question, too. When she said, I'm Jack Stanton, I'm calling you, she doesn't immediately think it's, like, Paul or somebody else trying to does she think that someone's trying to blackmail her, or does she think that they didn't do the job? Because she knows
No, she did that on purpose, she's doing that on purpose.
To throw him off and the private investigator.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Oh, jeez. Wow. Okay, now I'm getting a lot of it.
We're getting a little shattered.
I will say that there's a great quote from Greta Saatchi. I guess, you know, she said, you know, she had a breakthrough role in Heat and Dust, and she kind of earned a reputation for being relaxed about on-screen nudity because she has been naked in a handful of movies. And she said, with this movie, I just kind of reached my max. There I was in missionary position with like the sixth famous actor in 6 months on top of me. It was like Harrison Ford, Vincent D'Onofrio, Jimmy Smits, now Tom Berenger. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. And so that was the end. And she's like, I'm done. I'm done being naked on screen. This movie broke her.
Wow.
I'll just because I'm sure people have been screaming at us, I looked it up. It is Greta Saatchi.
Saatchi.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
So I just thought that was a funny quote from her to be like,
yeah,
she just got in this rut of just like, who is this man on top of me again? Like,
no, thanks.
No, thank you.
Well, and that's the thing is like all of these erotic thrillers, like they had sex scenes in them and they had like what did we watch? Jade?
Yeah.
Is that what we did?
Yeah. Which is similar to this.
Yeah. Which has similar vibes and similar like powerful men being terrible to women and all of the rest, you know, and this one is, and they all somehow are set in San Francisco.
And here's the other thing.
Which is very strange.
I'm just going to say that San Francisco, obviously known for its very interesting streets and architecture and like, and from a car standpoint, a great place for a car chase.
Oh, that's
where do
true.
They, where do they do a chase?
Cliffside drives, you know, like it's pretty. Right.
But where do they do their car chase in this? In the Redwood Forest. Like, there is, like, a Porsche jumping over bushes. Like,
yeah.
they are doing a two-person car chase in the forest. Like, it looks like out of something out of Return of the Jedi. Like, just running around through Redwoods. It's so weird. And then she also shoots at him and then explains that away. It's like, well, I didn't mean, I wasn't going to really shoot
She's
at you.
She's just trying to scare him.
Just trying to scare
well,
you.
Well, here... Is Sleeping with the Enemy also in
This is all in the same little zone, yeah.
I don't know if it's San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
I think I feel like that might be like the Pacific Northwest or something.
Okay. I feel like everyone's leaving San Francisco or going to, San Francisco. Yeah, I mean, my gosh. I will say that this movie gets a B+ audience score.
I'm going to say something. We haven't really talked about it, but I...
Yeah, Sleeping with the Enemy, Cape Cod to Iowa.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I did not hate this movie.
No, at all. I liked it.
No,
and
no.
I enjoyed the watch. So I, you know,
I don't know if I enjoyed it like as a film or I enjoyed it for this, but it was like of all the movies that we watch, it was there was an energy, there's a pulse to it that was different that I enjoyed.
It made me nostalgic for the movies of this time.
That's literally what I was just going to say. I was like, I don't know that I enjoyed this as much as it triggered an enjoyable nostalgia.
Yeah, like I actually think tonight I might want to watch Sleeping with the Enemy.
Well,
like there are
I'll
better movies yes. in this in the, there are better movies in this category.
We named a handful.
Jagged Edge, Body Heat, that are so good and that are so fantastic that this is just an echo of those and still is fun to watch. But this movie really, unless you figure out. Or until you are told the twist, the movie is purposefully confusing.
Yes.
Well, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It is constantly trying to confuse you so that you won't figure it out,
which
at times is annoying.
And, well, they basically are like, she's a liar, he's abusive, you're having an affair, your hands are different, you're over here, you're wearing a wig, we're going over here, I mistook that, you're here, like, I have an accent, I'm a New Yorker, I'm wearing such a New York hat, but I have a British accent, that New Yorker accent I still can't get over.
Bob Hoskins, the master of accents, as we saw in Super Mario. my favorite was when Tom Berenger goes to the office for the first time. He, again, has full-blown amnesia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And his assistant brings him coffee, and she says, you know, coffee with too Splenda, or whatever she says. I can't remember. Too sweet and low. Something like that. And he goes, hey, did you and me ever go to the Hacienda Hotel?
When he says that.
Asking his assistant if they had an affair upon his return to the office with amnesia. He's like, I just need to get up to speed because I have amnesia. Did we have an affair?
When he said that to her, by the way, I wanted to call out that assistant.
The look on her face is like, buddy, no.
I loved her, by the way.
She's obsessed
with her hair. I wish more women, more white ladies wore their full curls. Like, yeah,
their Carol Kane curls.
We don't see that anymore.
No.
But I will say this. Just not seeing it.
I will say this, and this is, I'm going to put on the shoulders of Wolfgang Petersen. They made her give so many weird glances, and like, you felt like at one point she was going to say, I got to tell you the truth. This is what's going on. Because she is constantly like looking like, oh, I hope he doesn't find out, or, oh, this is awkward.
Well,
like,
she's interacting with a totally different person.
But she's also looking at like scenes like, huh, who is this?
Yeah.
What's going on? Like, she is the most suspicious, but yet has no reveal at all. She doesn't add any piece to the equation at all
Nor does Corbin Burnson. Corbin Burnson does not return in the second half of the movie.
No, Corbin Burnson does my favorite move here, and I think it was a mixture of two cuts, but when he is reviewing his work, he's sitting at Tom Berenger's desk. He looks at his work. He takes off his glasses, throws them on the desk, gets up and goes, well, you did good work here. It's like, wait, so were you using Tom Berenger's glasses, or are those glasses for such effect that you have then like, let me go back and get my glasses
you
now.
Just
I
have a pair of reading glasses.
It's just, they're just punctuation glasses,
which is my favorite thing. Every time you see an attractive man in a movie, a leading man wearing glasses, that thing is like it is a prop among props. Like, the original Tron, Bruce Boxleitner, like what he does with those glasses, doing.
Who made the wrestler? Aronofsky?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He said that every day Mickey Rourke would try and wear glasses. He would pull glasses out of his pocket and try and do business with glasses. And he would have to stop him and tell wardrobe to not let him have glasses. Because he every day was trying to insert glasses constantly and business with the glasses.
That's
and the glasses.
Hilarious.
And it was like he was like, most of my job on this movie was trying to wrangle glasses out of Mickey Rourke's hands.
That's funny to me. It's like, it also like, to me, feels like I love an attractive man wrestling with glasses. I just love it.
I will say, you know, you're right, Jason, about the feeling of amnesia. And I believe that there's no finer actor playing that than Harrison Ford. Because what Harrison Ford does is,
well, does he have amnesia, or does he have a mental trauma?
Well, regarding Henry, he has amnesia.
Amnesia from a traumatic event.
I thought he had brain damage.
Well, in regarding Henry, he goes into a convenience store and he's shot during like a robbery.
Yes.
And he wakes up and is a completely, well, he's a different person, but he doesn't remember who he was. He doesn't remember his wife, doesn't remember his daughter. Yes. The whole movie is about like both remembering
he has
who
retrograde
he was and becoming
amnesia.
A better person.
Yeah. It's a difference.
Yeah, but I guess, of course.
I'm not.
Well, what's
the
difference? What are you parsing out here? The difference between amnesia.
I'm just going to leave meeting.
I know. I just was joking that like there's all these different like. I'm just saying that like Tom Berenger has psychogenic amnesia. He has retrograde amnesia.
Wait, what is psychogenic amnesia?
That's, I think, remembering how to do everything, but not everybody. Whereas I think...
Oh, so he knows how to do... Well, he should... He doesn't know how to do... Well, now
whereas,
he knows how to do things he never did.
Whereas
he knows
Harrison
how to drive.
Ford,
he knows
yes.
how to whatever.
Oh, I see what
where,
you're
where Harrison
okay.
Ford can neither move nor talk, and he has to relearn everything. So he's almost childlike. And so he's kind of like it's a slightly different amnesia. That's all. A more intense amnesia.
Can we call Paul's mom again and get her to really break down amnesia for us?
All right. The symptoms are memory loss of a certain time periods, events, and people, and personal information. A sense of being detached from yourself and your emotions. A perception that the people and things around you are as distorted and unreal. A blurred sense of reality. So that makes sense for Tom Berenger's character.
Well, I guess my point was like Tom Berenger as an actor. To me, now I don't really know what Jack was like, so maybe this was an Oscar-winning performance, but. what I love about Harrison Ford's work is like you get him, you see him coming to terms with like not knowing who he is and what he is. And it's just so compelling to watch. And it would have been a different movie in Harrison Ford's hands.
Well, it's also a different movie. Regarding Henry as a melodrama.
1,000%. I mean,
it's not a mystery kind of...
But there's a blankness to Tom Berenger in this movie. Yeah. Yes, to the
Tom Berenger...
Well, Tom Berenger is almost without... He's kind of like... He has no personality inside of... He's kind of a cipher inside of the movie, even though his only job is to continue to try and solve the case. He doesn't really have a point
we don't
of view
know.
Otherwise.
Yeah, we don't know. Like, we just know that he's in love with his wife, but he's not... He doesn't have the youthful sense or the... Like, he know... It's almost like he knows everything, but who he is.
He and doesn't have a personality.
Yes, I agree with
which
that.
Which is a hard thing for the lead character to be affectless.
You know what I mean?
This is why Bruce Willis turned down the role,
I think. Thing that's real is this is an era where there's a lot of amnesia in movies in this time. Like, and I couldn't tell you a movie currently that features someone having amnesia.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
Like, it is, it's not a thing.
Okay, can I just tell you right now, by the way,
it's like it doesn't happen anymore.
Amnesia is rare. It affects 1% of men and 2.6% of women in the general population. How many people get amnesia yearly? It says...
Almost none, I would
guess. 2 to 10 people per 100,000 is that's the number.
Per 100,000, actually. That's more than I would thought.
That's actually a decent amount.
Yeah, that's globally.
And I'm assuming almost all of this, obviously, is traumatic brain injuries. And, you know, some of this, people must come back.
Most of them are head and brain injuries, certain drugs, alcohol, traumatic events, and conditions such as Alzheimer's disease.
Well, listen, I remember when my mom was hit by a car and she had short-term memory loss. That was different from amnesia, but she worked at the same school for, at that point, 20 years. And had the same commute couldn't remember how to get to school.
Oh, wow.
So it is very, very, any head injury.
Any head injury. Can cause a whole slew of issues. And that includes like strokes and anything like that.
Sure.
You know, can really affect, you know, your brain in ways that are, you know, shocking. You know, people wake up out of strokes with the ability to like speak a language they couldn't speak before.
Mary Steenburgen,
Mary Steenburgen is
able to compose music. She sees like music now after she had a brain issue.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty amazing.
She became like incredibly, incredibly prolific. Able to play multiple instruments and has literally a song in her head all the time.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Something like that.
I will say that this movie came out 3 months after Regarding Henry. It is based on a novel.
That's why Harrison Ford probably couldn't do this.
Probably, yeah.
There
is a great, the Mike Nichols autobiography is absolutely fantastic. And there's so many great stories, but Mike Nichols directed Regarding Henry. And there's a great story here. He's having trouble with this movie, like trying to make it work and very openly getting frustrated at this film. There's a scene where Harrison Ford has people over his house and there's caviar on a tray. And Mike Nichols is like, no, that caviar is not. He's too rich to have. He would have better caviar than that. Shut down production, sent his assistant to go get like $10,000 worth of caviar to then be brought around the set mainly for the extras because it's not any bit of a plot point. It's just like opening on.
It's just a prop.
Opening on like a waiter carrying a tray. And it was just sort of like a moment in that book where like we knew things were a little rough when he shut down production to get the right looking caviar that he spent $10,000 on.
Like, talk about the wrong thing to be trying to fix.
But this is also that era. And this is what it all feels like. This era of like, like, this is, you know, it's like, it's too much. It's too much. And I will say this. This movie is based on a book, a 1969 novel called The Plastic Nightmare, which I think is, at the root of it, a great idea. Plastic surgery to take over someone else's life. I think that that's a great.
It's a great thriller concept, you know. Plus amnesia. This has got all of the ingredients of a great thriller. It's just really hard that the central character is so affectless and emotionless in a lot of ways, you know?
Well, obviously we had an opinion about this movie. There are people out there with a different opinion. It is now time for second opinions.
The movie was a piece of shit, yet this person recommends it. Tell me, what is the message? Maybe that art is subjective. Second opinion.
All right, everybody, these are five-star reviews pulled from Amazon. There are 533 total reviews on Amazon. 71% are five-star reviews. Only 3% are one-star reviews. And these movie reviews are great. From Jeffrey G. Delabare, he writes, I was going to buy it on 11/4/2018, I love this movie, but I called my buddy Betty June, haha. I wanted to show it to him because he knows it's a snake's name. He thought it was funny that his best friend had the same name as a snake. And then I looked and I said, haha, too much money. I can't afford $10. But for a very old movie I want new, stores will sell old DVDs for $1 or $2 or $3. So I'm just going to buy it there.
Oh, boy.
5 out of 5 stars title. It's awesome. This one is written by Ann Stern. Ann Stern writes, a suspenseful thriller, surprise ending. Don't watch it in the dark. Better not watch it alone. Enjoy it. A great tale of suspense. 5 stars. I wouldn't say that this is a movie that you can't watch in the dark. There's nothing scary about this unless you've murdered your husband. And he starts to figure out. Yeah, yeah. It's not like June, you often get afraid of the things that you get afraid of are very specific to the murder that happened. It's not like a Jason Voorhees is running around town willy-nilly murdering. Unless you've done something very wrong, you're pretty much in the clear.
Yeah, there's no present danger really in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, are you guys prepared? You know, like we talk about like having like being prepared for certain things, having an earthquake kit, having mm-hmm. like, you know, things available to you, you know, in case of emergency or whatever. Do you have any kind of amnesia kit? Ooh. Something that will remind you who you are should you find yourself in the position of having amnesia? And well, is that something that we should have?
If June, yeah, I think we should all put together.
Hasn't that been why we're recording this podcast?
Yeah.
I have a bunch of things in June's amnesia kit to remind her of certain things.
Triggers.
Yeah. So I have, and June, you don't even know about this, but these things will bring you.
Yeah.
I have a Batman cosplay outfit. If you come back from amnesia, I'm going to create you into a super nerd. I'm going to tell you just 2 more reviews because they're really great. This one's written by BWJ, says, all great actors. The story keeps you on the edge, not knowing who he is and why. Is good writing. The Animal Keeper is great in his role. Very good. Shattered. Great movie. 5 stars.
The Animal Keeper.
But well, this one is the one I really want to read from Dr. Jacques Coulardeau.
Ooh.
Dr. Jacques Coulardeau wrote this in December 16th, 10 days before, or, you know, 9 days before Christmas, 2005. A thriller based on the loss of memory after a car accident. Banal. The poor man who is trying to know what happened and is feeling something that is not what it should be has it all wrong from the very start and is the prisoner of the real killer who is ready to do anything to keep him. But is the loss of memory hiding the past of the man or the past of the murderer? That is the question. And that is where the plot is as thick as smog. Till the very last minute or nearly, there is no hope for you to know the truth. And when you finally know, it becomes so hectic on screen that you don't even have the power or energy to scream. And scream you should. Signed, Dr. Jacques Coulardeau, University of Paris, Dauphine, University of Paris, Pantheon, Sorbonne. 5 stars.
Wow.
It thrills pretty much.
Wow.
Huh.
Dr. Jacques really
from the Sorbonne.
I mean, I know he said it's banal at first, but I guess he really got into it. I mean, that was it.
Really? What a ride.
And scream you should.
Wow. Oh, wow. Okay.
Should our shirt for this movie just be "Who am I?" I'm not me. Man, oh man, this movie so good. You know, it got it like I said, people like it. 55 on the audience score on Rotten Tomato. The budget was $22 million. The opening weekend it grossed 3.4, and then it made a worldwide gross of 11.5. The top three movies in 91: Terminator 2, Judgment Day, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and Home Alone. This movie came in 102nd out of all the movies made in 1991. It was beaten by films that we've done in the podcast: Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze, Look Who's Talking 2, Hudson Hawk, Highlander 2, Drop Dead Fred, which just came out on Vinegar Syndrome, which is a great website that redoes classic cult films. Check it out if you don't know that is. They do. They did. That's how we got a copy of Tammy and T-Rex. The movie beat Body Parts and Nothing But Trouble, Mannequin 2 on the Move, and Cool as Ice. Wow, big year for sequels in 91. All number twos.
Yeah.
But that's just a little bit of information there. And the tagline is, a love he can't forget and a murder he can't remember.
Oh.
I like it.
Nice.
Would you recommend the film? I mean, we've talked about this a little bit. I think yes, across the board, right?
I mean, there are, I mentioned a bunch of other movies that I would watch before this that are this genre but better, but this certainly fits into them, and I would say go ahead, watch it. It's a lower tier erotic thriller, you know, but still fun.
Yeah, I feel the same. You know, I told Jason and Paul, like, I wasn't feeling that well, and this movie did provide some amount of joy and comfort. So I genuinely enjoyed it. And it felt more like, oh, it's nice to watch this movie, like Jason said, so you can watch better movies.
They're also, like, they don't make mid-budget comedies that much anymore, and they don't make thrillers like the same way. This would be a perfect zone for Netflix to get in. Let's bring back the Malices. Let's bring back the Primal Fears.
But we also, like, don't have, like, eroticism in movies. Like, the erotic thriller, we don't have, like, sex like this in movies anymore. This isn't, it's not tied up in this kind of stuff. Like, those kind of, like, we do movies now that are about, like, just serial killers or, you know, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, this was the kind of movie that you would rent at the video store, you know?
So happily. I would see this cover and
where people and are, like, making out. People are making out on the cover. Like, that's the other thing, too, is, like, these movies were about, like, tongue kissing.
Why did we have to watch it with our families?
Because that's all you did. Everybody watched you when you rented a movie. Everybody watched it together.
Because also your parents are like, I watch all your fucking bullshit. This is the time for us to sit back and have a little bit of a mystery.
June,
I know, talking about Amnesia, if you're okay telling the story, I do love the story of your mom watching Jason Bourne, another famous person who have amnesiac, and what your mom said to your sister.
Can you tell it, babe? Because you're going to remember the exact phrasing.
Well, so Jason Bourne is, you know, having sex in that movie, and June's mom turns to her sister and goes, well, he didn't forget that.
Wouldn't it be great if Jason Bourne, if it's Franca Potentate, I think, is starts to have sex with him and he goes, what are you doing? What is this? What's happening? What are you doing?
I didn't forget that. Jason, June, I want to remind everybody that we continue this conversation on How Did This Get Made? Last Looks, where you get to weigh in on all the things that we might have missed. You might have been able to clarify some points that we have some issues with here. Maybe you have some information about the pet store they shot in, because we are really getting into deep dives. From Dancing It's On, we got a lot of information about that movie. There is amazing wealth of red carpet footage from Dancing It's On. So you get to watch everybody talk about their experiences in the film. But so tune into that. Also, Jason and I are often on there talking about what we like in a little segment called Quar Chat. But besides that, June, what do you want to plug anything?
Well, I've already talked about Dateline, but but it really is... it's a nice podcast to listen to. It just is. It's really nice.
My God.
It must be, because I don't know if you guys feel this way about podcasts that you listen to. It must be nice to listen to a podcast that you hope to never be a guest on.
Oh, God, yeah. You know, and I don't, I also like am weirded out by the true crime community mm-hmm. and the sort of exploitation of victims. So please know that there obviously are victims of horrific crimes on this show. But for some of us, it is their stories are cautionary tales, and you get to like really hear about red flags and really look at your partner and ask some questions.
Okay.
Even on Zoom, that was uncomfortable.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Interesting. Again, the number if you want to call, Jason, anything you want to promote?
I will mention I was on Jason Concepcion's podcast X-Ray Vision recently, just talking about comic books.
Oh, fun!
Which was a blast, talking about lots of great stuff. And I'll just throw out a recommendation to people because we talked about their wonderful book, Mr. Miracle. But Tom King, Mitch Gerrits, who did our How Did This Get Made tour poster, and Evan Doc Shaner have done another book called Strange Adventures that's just now completed and is in hardcover, so you can get that. And it is a fantastic comic series. And then I'll just also mention Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples' Saga is back, finally, with new issues. So if you want to catch up on that, it is maybe one of the best ongoing comics in the moment. So it's
I agree with that 100%. I have nothing of note, I think, to promote, but I would like to tell everybody that we are doing live shows. That's right. We are doing live shows. April 14th is the next show. We've just added a brand new one, so see if you can get tickets for that. Two shows back to back, and stay tuned for some...
At Largo.
At Largo. Yes, thank you. At Largo in Los Angeles, and we have some more shows coming up hopefully soon, so check out hdtgm.com, and remember, if you want to call in, have your voice heard on Last Looks, you want to ask me a question about your life, or Cody, or Devin, or Molly, you can do that at 619-PAUL-ASK, or you could just talk about this movie. I can't wait to get back to these live shows, and we will see everybody who's coming out to our first live show this month at Largo in just a little bit. All right, so a big thank you to our super producer, Cody Fisher, our engineer, Devin Bryant, our other producer, Molly, our movie-picking producer, Avril Halley, and, of course, all the amazing people that do the artwork for the show. That is the Ghost of Craig T. Nelson on Instagram. That's Zach McAleese. And of course, Kyle Waldron. You see all their work on our Facebook and Instagram pages. And speaking of that, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, all the different places, all the time, because that's, you know, we are social people. We love it. A big thank you to our publisher, July Diaz, who does an amazing job at making sure this episode gets out and gets into your ears right on time, and not like those episodes that you don't get, like on Dateline that June mentioned.
They're pretty good.
And of course, always check Tee Public, where we have our shirts and available. And right now we are running a special promotion. All benefits to our shirt from Dancing It's On goes to benefit Ukrainian relief funds. And that's pretty amazing that Tee Public is doing that. And we're very happy to do that as well. So we'll see you next week on Last Looks. Bye for now.
Thinking of going on a juice-only fast? Go on an even faster one with the half car, half juicer. Slice your commute time in half, and a lot more besides, in this vegan-friendly, cutting-edge hybrid.
There's a wrong way to do hybrid. And a right way. Powered by over two decades of hybrid innovation and featuring a connected in-car multimedia suite, the Toyota CHR self-charging hybrid is living proof not all hybrids are born equal. Hello, hybrid happiness.